Welcome to Success Is Podcast. I'm your host, Phil Portman, serial entrepreneur, author, and podcast host. Whether success for you is more money, time with your family, a healthy, well-balanced life, or freedom, I'm interviewing guests and getting you the advice to make it happen. So join me as we uncomplicate the complicated, help you define success, and give you the strategies to make it happen. Well, thank you for joining us today. Today, my guest is Jeremy Smith. With nearly 15 years in the life and health industry, as an agent, trainer, manager, agency owner, and business coach for life and health agents. Thank you for joining me today, Jeremy.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited.
So let's start it off with the theme of our podcast is success is. What does success mean to you, Jeremy?
Right off the bat with a big philosophy question, huh? You know, I've been asked that question many times, you know, and it's been a moving target over my life. You know, in my 20s, in my younger 20s, mid 20s, success was just getting to do whatever I wanted to go do. Unfortunately, as I got older, the things I wanted to do cost more money,
yeah.
Got more expensive. And so as I got, and I look back into my late 20s and my 30s, I became hyper-focused on making money. And you know, this is ego talking, but building the name for myself. As I got into my 40s, that all changed once again. I figured out that it wasn't about having a lot of money and it wasn't about having a lot of time. I've got buddies that have rarely work, you know, that don't have jobs, have all the time in the world. And I've got buddies that work 90 hours a week. I mean, they've got a name for themselves and they don't have any time to spend the money. You know, so I think that, you know, for lack of better words, maybe other than wisdom, for in my 40s, what I evaluate success as now is being able to have control of both my time and my money at the same time. Because what's success if you're not happy? Right. I mean, that's really what it's all about. So, you know, I know this is, we're going to talk a lot of business. And so that equates to money and money definitely allows for happiness. Money definitely allows for success in some people's eyes. But to me, being able to have control of both those two things at the same time is really probably how I would define it.
Absolutely. And I think we all kind of have gone through that stage where in the beginning, you get in your 20s and you're like, well, I need money to do it. So that's the most important thing to me. And then slowly it evolves and you realize that, man, I can't be working these 80 hours the rest of my life. This is not sustainable, right?
I had a little girl, my first child when I was 40. And I think that's what really kind of turned it. You know, prior to that, I wouldn't say I was I was successful in business. I mean, eye of the beholder, but by a lot, I was successful in business. But it opened my eyes when I seen my child for the first time. I think that's what really did it for me. And I realized what kind of parent I wanted to be. And that parent wasn't to leave millions of dollars to my child. It was to be able to be present for her. You know, if I can do both, great. But I think that the latter is probably more important.
Absolutely. Yeah. Your priorities quickly shift when you look into the eyes of that child and say, this is what matters, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So I've seen plenty of self-employed people get sucked into this world of being overworked and overstressed, you know, working 80 hours, popping Adderall in some cases. And if not that, tons of caffeine.
Yep.
I look at what you have going on and you run a business and you also do the consulting and opening restaurants. I mean, you have a lot going on. What separates somebody from you with able to achieve all of these different things from like a self-employed individual that's just burning themselves out and can't step away from any area of their business?
Well, as I'm sucking down my caffeine here, you know, I'll tell you, I got really lucky in life. And, you know, the best advice I could ever give any young person, self-employed person, is find a mentor. Find somebody that's been down the road they're traveling. I did that accidentally. And, he taught me something I don't think I ever would have figured out on my own. And that was a process to be able to get yourself to the other side, you know, of the river, if you will, where you're not working yourself to death, where you can branch out and you can expand and do other things. That process was, number one, documentation, which, you know, if you're in the sales world, if you're in the insurance business, selling anything, and you're any good at it, you're probably a type A personality. And so documenting things is really against your nature.
That's right. I mean, firsthand experience, guilty here. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it took years for him to get this message across to me. Yep. But the first example came to me with my insurance brokerage. I had an insurance brokerage from 2009. I sold it in 2015. And for the first couple years, he was just on me and on me and on me about documenting everything. And by everything, I mean everything. I mean my sales meetings, our scripts, our marketing plans, our procedures, everything from, you know, what does my secretary say to the customers when they walk in the door? Everything, building a manual for how we do business. And the visual was always, if my right-hand guy got dropped out of an airplane and I died the next day and he wanted to take our company and go, with this book, he could literally duplicate what we were doing. Okay. So that was step one. Step two was I need to become really good at training my people to use this manual and training my people to do exactly how I wanted things done. And that was a learning curve all on its own. But once I became good at that and I got everybody marching to the same beat, next came the toughest part of the step, which was delegation. You know, I mean, especially for me at, you know, think back to 32 years old, man, I was just a control freak. If you're a control freak, good luck. you're probably not going to have multiple businesses. You're probably not going to go as far as you probably could go. And you certainly aren't coming home at 4 o'clock. You're not playing golf on Tuesday afternoon. You're going to be there because you've got to learn that after you've got it documented, after you've got your people trained, they know what to do. You got to be able to give up the reins and let them take over. You know, and then the wrap up step to that's just management, learning how to, although you've delegated and everybody's in place, keep an eye on everything. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, another thing that was burnt into me from my mentor was performance accounting and tracking everything and learning how to read the numbers and being able to look at an Excel spreadsheet and know exactly what the problem is in the office if I'm sitting on the beach in Hawaii. And if you can do that, and your people are trained and they know they've got a Bible for how to do things, all of a sudden you can branch off and try something different, or you can free up time, do what you want with it. But that was, those were four steps that I had no clue of in my 20s. I learned in my 30s and I mastered in my 40s.
Absolutely. Now, those skill sets around managing, people management specifically, was that something you learned from your mentor, or how did you
skills? Yeah, I mean, you know, trial and error, right, to some degree. You know, I went to work, good story about this, is I went to work in the insurance business in 2007. I went to work for a captive agency. Sales always came pretty easy to me, so I did really well for the first 3 months, sold a lot of policies, got promoted in management in like the fourth month, got two people put under me, you know, from a management standpoint. And inside of 2 months, they both failed miserably, quit, and wrote a letter to the owner saying I was the worst manager they ever had. So there's that trial. I learned some stuff from the negatives too.
Yeah.
Long story short, I went back to selling for a few months, really learned the business. Then worked my way back to management. I think I became a lot better manager there. When I started my own company, Yeah, I got to say that, you know, having a mentor, and I've had two good mentors in my life, but both of them had some very consistent things that they both believed in that really led me down the path. Number one was a keen eye on detail. You know, the little things are the things that matters. You've got an agent or a manager or somebody underneath you that's walking in the hall and you see them that they're down in the dumps in their day. You know, they broke up with their girlfriend or their dog got ran over or whatever happened. And you got to address that because it costs you money if you don't address that. And I mean, first of all, making them feel like you care about them, hopefully you actually do, but those little things can spiral into big problems if you don't address them. The other thing they both had in common was, like I talked about a second ago, performance accounting and really watching the numbers of your business and understanding all the metrics and really what they mean. In my business, a lot of people, you know, they buy leads, you know, so they can go out and sell insurance products. They'll send mailers out per se. And then they hope that some callbacks come back in. But if you don't really get dialed in to figure out the script of exactly what you're saying when those people call in or what your mail piece was, if you don't keep track of all of those things, you can't make proper adjustments and you can't ultimately end up finding real success. And that's just one little baby metric that probably applies to most businesses.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think one of the things that you've talked about throughout your entire journey is that you're always learning.
Yeah. Right?
You're always changing how you think, how you operate. You're putting on a new hat as you go along. And over the last 2 years, we've obviously seen a ton of change in every business industry. And you're finding that some people are thriving because of COVID and everything that happened, while others stuck in kind of their old way of doing things are failing. And unfortunately, it's resulting in closed businesses and that sort of thing. And I think what you've described here is probably a major component of that. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, this term gets used a lot, but COVID has kind of made the great divide in businesses. And, you know, it used to be that for most businesses, there was a blueprint for it. You know, I used to own a mortgage brokerage in the early 2000s, and there'd been 1,000 mortgage brokerages built before then. There was a blueprint for it. You know, if I wanted to go open up a Dairy Queen, there's a manual for how to do it. Yeah, there's still kind of manuals for how to do all the businesses that we operate and own today, but there's different rules to it. You know, the guys that you got to have some creativity for one. And you got to be able to, I think this is a big one, you've got to be able to take chances and be willing to take chances and step outside your comfort zone. You know, in the insurance business, for example, the people that are succeeding this last year and a half, in my opinion, are the people that really got serious about developing their systems. How do I handle this phone call? What shirt am I wearing all the way to what's my backdrop on a Zoom call? You know, how do I take a client from howdy doody time to get the business climb to close time? People that are out there kind of winging that, I guarantee they don't have as good results. And it's just, hopefully this world we live in of COVID, and I hope it's not going to be a forever thing, but I think it's here for a little while. And the people that don't embrace that right now, they may not be here when it's gone, at least business wise.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. And even if it's not COVID, there's always some sort of change going on, right?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, we saw the economy before in the past, in the future, it could be AI, you know, who knows what's going to change, and being able to adapt, I think, is incredibly important. I think you articulated that well.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about your area of expertise, which is health and life insurance. What mistakes do health and life agents make? New health agent, life agents, or existing veterans in the industry? What are some of the biggest mistakes that you see when they come to you for coaching?
Well, this is an easy question. You know, this is my answer to this, the second place answer is not even close. In this country, there are a huge percentage of people that are product salespeople. They normally, the majority of the people, the majority of insurance agents in the life and health business, they are final expense salespeople or mortgage protection salespeople. And then the biggest genre is health insurance or Medicare supplements, Medicare Advantage salespeople. And it's those are the easiest categories to learn when you're first coming in. I mean, I could teach those categories before my coffee got cold. I'm being a little facetious there, but they're easy categories to learn. The marketing's pretty elementary. You know, a lot of, you know, they might be as easy as going and sitting in a Walmart, you know, during an open enrollment period in the fall just to build a clientele base. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But in our business, just like almost any sales business, the hardest thing that we have to do in our business to be successful is figure out how are we going to get in front of a qualified prospect on a consistent basis. I mean, that's just it. That's the hardest thing we have to do. If you ask me what I think the biggest mistake that the majority of the agents in our business do, it is that they get in front of all of these qualified prospects. And I'll use a baseball analogy for a second. The only thing they know how to do is hit a fastball. They're finally up to the plate and there's one pitch they can hit. Pitcher throws a curveball, a slider, a changeup, or anything else, and they're going back to the dugout. In this business, you get in front of somebody that says, I'm open to you telling me what I need to do for my retirement. I trust you enough to purchase my health insurance from you. And oh, by the way, you're not going to do the work to learn how to talk to them about long-term care, about leaving money to their kids and grandkids in the form of life insurance, about protecting their lifelong nest egg, you know, from the crazy stock market that we live in and the scared things that are the things that could scare you really if you're a 70-year-old with your money at risk. There's four or five key areas in life and health. It's Medicare, Medicare Advantage. It's final expense, planning for your funerals, life insurance, moving it on to your kids and grandkids, long-term care. And then there's annuities, a product that protects seniors' money from risk. If you ever really would ever go and look at my YouTube channel, I've got 35, 40 videos on there, and they're really all centered around becoming a full service agent. That is the mistake I think most people they make, is that they don't drive towards becoming a full service agent. If I can sell all of those products, I don't have to get in front of 1,000 prospects this year in order to make a good living. I got to get in front of a fifth of the same number that the guy that can only sell one product does. Not to mention, and I'll just add this, it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. You're never going to run into a client that has a tough situation and says, oh, you oversold me, right? On the other side, if they run into a situation, you said, hey, don't worry, I got you covered, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, you get grandma across the table from you and you take care of her health insurance, let's say, for example, and you never mention any options about protecting yourself from long-term care situations, which is the biggest financial time bomb there is for a senior. A good percentage of those people say, I guess I probably just didn't need that coverage, or Jeremy would have talked to me about it. And next thing you know, 7-8 years later, they go into a long-term care situation. It wrecks their entire financial situation. And now all that mistake passes on for generations. So that's why I say it's the right thing to do. I mean, I think it's without a doubt the key to an insurance agent making a decent living. And I think it's the right thing to do by the clients. And I think that by far, I couldn't even give you what the second answer would be as far as, you know, the common mistake that insurance agents make.
Absolutely.
It's a long-winded answer. Sorry.
No. And it's a great answer. And I think it's, especially in sales in general, you know, a lot of people run into that, whether they're selling from their own pocketbook, right? Yeah. Or, you know, especially the newer agents, they're just so happy they made the sale, you know? But if you're really understanding your client and their needs, and you understand that by providing this service, you're offering them what they need and what they don't understand they need, then you're doing your job fully in that aspect. And I think that's the part where a lot of people miss, and I that makes sense. Absolutely.
I'll close this question up with the analogy I always use is if you're a car salesman and you had every car, every used and new car in the country on your lot, you'd probably sell a lot more cars than, you know, the 100 cars you might have in your lot. As an insurance agent, you've got access to sell every single product from every single company in the entire country. Now, you can't go learn all of the products, but they're all virtually the same. You've got people that will help you in our hierarchy of business that'll tell you what the best ones in each product line are. It's crazy to me that all agents aren't striving towards that.
Absolutely. That makes sense. So when you're talking to somebody who's struggling in your industry, and it's a mindset piece or it's a change piece, how do you convince them to make that switch?
Well, I mean, fortunately for me in my position as a business coach, normally that person is already there before they found me. I'm not prospecting people to coach. Normally they're finding me now. And so they've already kind of got that gear turning in their mind of, I need a change, you know, in something. In the beginning, it wasn't that way, though. When I first started coaching and nobody had a clue who I was and I'd never coached one person, it took some salesmanship at that point. A lot of times at that point, it was just kind of showing proof that, you know, I'd probably been farther down the road than they had been. But I've always kind of lived my life by a rule, you know, and that is if things aren't working, change it up. And it's pretty easy to spot people, especially in my business, but just in general, when you can just look in their eyes and figure out things aren't working for them, they know what's not working for them. You know, they're almost out there, you know, walking around with their eyes closed, just praying for somebody to shine a flashlight in their eyes and say, what do I do? And at the end of the day, in that scenario, just talk in general, it doesn't matter what you do. Just do something different. Change it up until you find something that works.
Yeah. Commit to action, right? Do something. So is it your clients, is it typically a lack of sales or being overworked, overstressed?
I don't know. I suppose it's all different reasons. You know, I work with agents. I work with agency owners, people that have got 50 to 100 agents working underneath them. I think the answer is probably different for both of those people. You know, normally independent agents, they're trying to figure out, how do I make more money? It's just kind of the first step in the pyramid. They're trying to figure out, what can I do different to make more money? Agency owners, people that are a little bit farther down the road, it's probably the opposite. Don't get me wrong, they may be, how do I just keep going? And those are, you know, how do I keep growing? And I want to conquer the world. Those guys are few and far between. They're fun to work with. But a lot of them, it's the same answer, whether you're trying to take over the world or whether you're trying to get some time back in your life, they're the same answers. You got to free up time to do either one of those two things. And the way you free up time is to put a magnifying glass on your systems and document how you do things, tweak how you do things, adjust and repeat. And that's the process, regardless of whether you're trying to create more time or more business.
Absolutely. I've seen agents all the time, you know, they're missing appointments, they're showing up late, their paperwork's a disaster all over the place. And they can't comprehend how you could grow past this level. Right.
Yeah. That's type A personality thing again. Right.
Absolutely. Yep. So somebody, let's say somebody's stuck in life and their career. What's the biggest advice that you would give that person?
You know, About 2 years ago, I had an agent turn me on to the Joe Rogan podcast. You ever watch Joe Rogan?
I have.
Or listen to Joe Rogan's podcast? I mean, he's an interesting cat. I was kind of reluctant at the beginning. I listen to him pretty religiously now. You know, and one of the things that he talks about, I mean, he's obviously a super successful person. And I've really embraced his philosophy, which is embrace the suck. That thing you don't want to do is the thing, if you can condition your mind and condition your body to do it, good things come from it. So, you know, your first question to me today was, you know, what's my thought on what success is, and which is really happiness. And another way I could have answered that question is balance of life, right? You know, it might be spiritual, it might be financial, it might be family, it might be physical health. You know, there's four or five pillars that really you can look at somebody and decide whether or not they're a healthy person. Well, for these people that you're talking about that are kind of in a rut or struggling, the real answer for them is they got to get some balance in their life. You know, that one of those pillars is probably not even attached to the table anymore. Taking care of themselves first and getting those pillars in balance, I would say is the first step to that. And then the next step is, and well, back up to that, there's probably going to be some embracing of the suck in order to do that, right? You're not healthy. Guess what? The hardest thing to do is to get back to the gym and form a habit of going to the gym and physically feeling better. But if you do it for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks, it gets easier and it almost becomes an addiction. I don't know about you, but I have started going to the gym more times in 25 years than anybody I know. And it stinks.
Yep.
But once I get into the habit, it's like a drug. I love it. Once I get past a certain stage, God, I just feel so much better. So anyway, the balance thing, I think, is the first step for those people. You know, and the other thing for me, and I can't say this is maybe for everybody, but for me, I'm not afraid to take chances. You know, again, if things aren't working for me in my life, I'm not afraid to go jump into a different river. And, you know, that challenge of that river really inspires me. And I find myself, when I put myself in a position where there's not really other options other than to succeed, I normally find a way to do that. And I think a lot of people are afraid to jump into that river and put themselves in that position because they might drown. And I think the majority of them would figure out, they'd figure out a way to succeed if there wasn't any other options.
Absolutely. You know, one of the biggest concerns is getting comfortable for me. Yep. Right. I never want to just be comfortable because
that's the enemy. Get outside your comfort zone. That's where it's at.
That's where you're challenging. Yeah. That's almost that embracing the suck because it's all delayed gratification, right? By working out in that moment, it sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks waking up and going running, you know, it's not fun, but you know what? Down the road, when you start feeling better, you're healthier, you're looking good, right? Your wife notices, you know, a little extra muscle here, you know.
It all compounds. And then next thing you know, I mean, things just pop for you. And, you know, working out's just the easy example on it. But, you know, there's a whole lot of elements in your life that make you healthy. But majority of the people that aren't healthy, that aren't happy, one of those elements is suffering. And they need to fix that before they're really going to be able to take too many steps forward to fix the problem.
Absolutely. No, it's great advice. Absolutely. Well, thank you for getting on with us today. We appreciate your time. Could you just close us out with how does someone get a hold of you if they want to reach out to you to help them out or need some advice with their business?
Yeah. No, thanks for having me. This was fun. It's easy. I've got a website that's Jeremy Smith Academy, and I've got a YouTube channel that you can check out if you're an insurance agent. I've got everything on there that I can think of video wise, from the, how do you pass your test to how do you sell annuities? And it's Jeremy Smith Academy on YouTube.
Well, thank you so much, Jeremy. Thank you guys for watching. Be sure to subscribe, comment if you'd like to see us, add, one of you as a guest, or if you guys have any recommendations for future guests. Thanks again, Jeremy. Have a great day.
Thank you.
See you guys next time.